Welcome, everyone, to Horse's Mouth Advisor Radio. Today is Friday, May 23rd, 2014. I'm Doug Pierce, Associate Editor at Horse's Mouth, and today, once again, I'm joined by Charles Sherry, author of our weekly Advisor Talking Points column. Charles, thanks for being with me. Now, you title this week's Advisor Talking Points, Junk Debt Turns to Gold. So what's going on with that junk debt?
Well, thanks, Doug, and thanks for having me back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the big story this year has been a surprise in the bond market. We've not seen the continual upward march in yields as had been generally been expected. And this week I wanted to take a look, continue to delve into what's going on in the bond market and highlight what's happening in high-yield debt, which some folks are now saying probably shouldn't be called high yield anymore as rates continue to fall. Let's take a look. We'll jump right back in. We'll jump right into figure one. You look at the early summer of 2012, you had problems with Greece and Spain. Temporarily, we saw a risk-off trade. We got past that. We saw another instance middle of 2013. If you remember, we had all the Bernanke taper talk. Mm-hmm. Probably what was happening here, and Janet Yellen's reference this, we saw an unwinding of the carry trade that had maybe bet on stable or falling yields. You go back to the time Bernanke laid out that roadmap for tapering. He was going to start sometime in the fall, probably finishing up sometime May or June of 2014, and then all of a sudden there was this expectation that the Fed would start to raise interest rates. And that hit treasuries, and it particularly hard. It hit junk debt. Of course, we had that full court press we saw at the end of June, and a number of Fed officials coming out, strongly suggesting that the Fed was not looking to take a more hawkish or aggressive stance. That seemed to calm the junk bond debt market down. We started to see yields generally begin to decline. Even as Treasury yields were to go up and peak the 10-year at 3.04% on December 31st of last year. And I think, Doug, there's a couple of things that are happening right here. First of all, it's a sign of relative confidence in the economy. And let me explain. Investors are not going to go into risky assets like junk debt if there's an indication that the economy is going to stall, which makes it more difficult for companies on the credit bubble to go ahead and make their interest payments. Second, we've got this reach for yield, and it's probably due to Fed signals that any tightening, when it begins, will be very gradual and slow. And what we seem to be getting from Fed officials right now is we may see the first hike in interest rates, again, if all goes according to plan, sometime in the middle of 2015. But even then, it will not be, from what they're telling us, it's not going to be a aggressive rate increases. So you've got investors that are, again, their goal is to anchor that long end of the yield curve to encourage you and I to go out and borrow and spend and then get businesses to do the same thing. And if we're not going to get that tightening, you've got investors looking for yield. I mean, the Federal Reserve has got safe investments at rock bottom levels when it comes, you think of things like CDs or treasury bills or very short-term treasuries, or one-year notes, for example. So you're trying to find that yield, and one way that's being done is money's flowing in the junk debt. And of course, from a corporate standpoint, that could be argued that it's good. Just like if you and I were to go ahead and refinance our mortgages at lower rates, it frees up cash flow. Same thing with companies that are refinancing debt. If there is some expansion plans with some of these firms that are less than financially stable, they are able to get the capital. At the same time, it creates that risk or concern that a bubble's developing because too much money is going into that, and that's some of the concerns we're hearing. And you never know when that bubble might go pop. Right now, everything seems there's a lot of complacency out there. Economy is growing. Rates are expected to stay low, and that's been supporting the market. But it kind of almost reminds me of a game when you're a kid, you're playing musical chairs. You know the music's going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
But when the music stops, you hope you've got a seat.
Yeah.
And that's what investors have to be looking for, is when, and hopefully they've got that seat. And we don't know when it's going to happen. And it's another reason, it's another time to emphasize to clients that's why we diversify. Timing the market or timing particular asset classes is exceedingly difficult. And so diversification helps, of course, mitigate that risk.
Yeah, I like the musical chairs analogy. That actually, I wonder if that's a good one to use with clients, kind of.
I think it would be, and it would be one that could be used, not just, of course, junk debt. It could be used anytime there's those concerns of a bubble. We're moving ahead when valuations, just when particular asset classes are overvalued. There's one way to, of course, handle that is to pull back, to reduce risk, pull some of that off the table. But even that diversification also gives you some protection.
Okay, well, let's move on to the next point. Where there's some action in rate-sensitive groups.
Yeah.
What's up there?
Well, last week I went ahead and looked at mostly various different classes within the bond sector. Now I want to take a little bit more about what's happening with some of the rate-sensitive groups. And so we get a little broader here. And, of course, the bet, if you had bet early in the year, it may on falling rates, you may have been rewarded rather handsomely. Of course, taking on, as we discussed in the last point, taking on that additional risk, let's take a look at some of those asset classes. First of all, I wanted to jump into the mortgage REITs. I picked ticker, it's a large one, I picked ticker symbol NLY. Mortgage REITs are exceedingly volatile. They use an enormous amount of leverage, but they pay very juicy dividends, and many of these pay double-digit returns. Since mortgage rates have stabilized and come down, we've seen these do exceedingly well, not just with the dividend, but the capital appreciation you would have also seen. But I do want to emphasize they're still well off last year's peaks. Again, they're very volatile. You've got the Vanguard's more traditional REIT. That's done quite well. The interest in yield has, and some of the uncertainty in the market has helped utilities. So we've seen utility stocks do well. Even emerging market debt is up. Corporate debt, although I don't have the full performance, I did want to compare, since we had talking point one, I did want to compare with how junk debt's performing, and ticker symbol JNK is a popular ETF used for someone who wants to participate in the high yield market at the same time to diversify and have that liquidity. But then I found it kind of interesting. The housing sector is also rate sensitive, should be doing well with mortgage rates coming down and treasury yields coming down, and just the opposite's happened. And I think what we're seeing here is just some of the concern that's out there with the new home builders and the housing market in general. Single-family housing starts have flattened. Same with single-family building permits. It just doesn't see that the momentum that we were seeing last year, for at least for now, has dissipated. And I think, and that, of course, that's being reflected in weakness in the housing stocks and the housing sector, you know, even as interest rates have come down.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the next point then, sector rotation.
Haven't done sector rotation in a while. Part of the reason I like to do sector rotation when we see big moves in the market, whether it be upward moves or downward moves, and kind of taking that look under the hood of what's moving the market. Well, S&P is up just slightly since the beginning of the year, and the conclusion you have to say is there's really no clear pattern what's going on. First of all, utilities have done quite well. It's a defensive sector of the market. It's a way to stay invested. At the same time, reduce some of the risk. At least that's traditionally how it's been viewed. But what we're also seeing, of course, with that reach for yield, utilities have done quite well. But after that, it gets a bit fuzzy. When you look at energy and materials, it's more of a cyclical sector. That's doing well, but those two sectors have underperformed the market, or some of the worst performing sectors since the bull market began back in March 2009. We're doing well on information technology. There's a more aggressive cyclical group. Then a couple other dividend plays. You've got your telecom and staples. Just slightly above the S&P 500, and that's just a snapshot December 31st through May 20th. We're only looking at a few basis points that separate these. The S&P can be up 50 basis points or a half percent in a day, telecom's down a quarter, and then it looks like it's underperforming. But the reality, even though those are viewed somewhat as dividends and defensive, they're more or less performing on how the market's doing. We're not doing well with industrials, consumer discretionary. I mean, here's a sector that's led the market since the rally began in 2009. We're seeing some struggle, this group struggling right now. And then finally, I can look at financials. Mortgage originations are down, and the flattening yield curve doesn't help the banks. So you can kind of see, even though we've got the even though utilities are leading the way, we're seeing strength in some that would be called more aggressive cyclicals relative to the rest of the market. And there's just no real pattern that's emerged as the market's kind of S&P 500 index, the large caps, have just, well, muddled along since the beginning of the year.
Kind of in a limbo state.
That's what it's felt like. And, of course, if you start looking at small cap growth, now we're seeing a little bit of damage there with some of those down close or even more than 10%. But those are the more aggressive, riskier plays. And I've talked about this before, but I think a lot of it has to do with the Fed is unwinding QE, and that had been one of the supports that had that propelled the high-flying momentum stocks. The Fed is bent on, tapering and ending quantitative easing sometime later in the year, probably by the end of the year, and that seems to have created a tailwind for some of the more aggressive stocks.
Okay, well, as everyone knows, this is Memorial Day weekend, so the markets are closed on Monday. But what do we have coming up in the next short week?
Short week, but it's going to be packed a fair bit with some data. One of the ones that's going to get a lot of press, but I think we really want to look back, is the second look at first quarter GDP. I was taking a look at some of the early estimates this morning. Right now, it looks like the consensus, we're going to probably, we could see maybe a drop of about 0.5% in first quarter GDP as more complete data has come in. But let me emphasize, it's first quarter. It's January, February, and March. We're about to enter June, and markets tend to look forward. Unless this is a really weak number, which could cause maybe some brief volatility, I think markets are probably going to go ahead and look past that. I'm more interested in kind of keeping an eye on what's happening with the housing market. We've got pending home sales, which looks at existing home sales, contracts signed but not closed. And one of the things we're starting to see right now, and we're going to also get home prices, it looks like we're seeing some stabilization in existing home sales. They were up, we were released this week, so we may be kind of turning the corner there. I saw a good report that came out this morning on new home sales, but caution there, that has been very volatile in the last 6 to 8 months. We have been stuck in a very wide range, good numbers 1 month, weak numbers the next month. You start to wonder about a little bit about the data because it's so lumpy, or some of the seasonality or the way they're seasonally adjusting. At worst, we're muddling along in the housing market. At best, we're finally starting to see a turnaround. One thing I might mention, we're seeing a lot of strength in multifamily starts. Whether you're building a home or you're building an apartment or some type of townhome, that still feeds right through the GDP. That is a positive. We're just not seeing that interest in housing, which has always been that general support, because you and I know you buy a home, even if it's an existing home, it's just a transfer of an asset. It doesn't really do much for GDP, with, of course, the exception of commissions generated by realtors and assistants. There's a multiplier there, but suddenly you move into that house, Doug, and it's up. We need new carpet. Let's do something to the floors. And up, the furniture's not working. But help the economy there. And, of course, we do this till we either, A, run out of money, or, B, we get tired of doing projects.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was reading on the New York Times website, they actually have a calculator, titled, to rent or buy, and it kind of takes into effect, all the costs of home ownership that people don't tend to think about, and that, comparing it with, based on how long you plan on living in that place. Is it better to rent or buy? So kind of neat.
And a lot of that, like you're saying, how long? And there's so many things that go into that we don't think of. And a lot of that does have to be, how long do you plan on staying there? Is this temporary? What is your temporary situation? a lot goes into that. And of course, depending on where you're at in the country, that can make a difference between what rents are and what housing prices are. And I know where I'm at here, the rental market is tight in the Denver area, and you're seeing rents going up.
Mm-hmm.
Housing prices are also going up, but lately rates have been coming down, so there's somewhat of an offset there. But again, that's extremely anecdotal because real estate it tends to be very local.
Okay, well, thank you, Charles. Memorial Day weekend, you got any big plans?
This plan this weekend, I've got a nice hike planned on Saturday. It's going to be in the morning. It'll be a nice 4-mile hike up at elevation in the mountains. Going to bring some rain gear.
Uh-huh.
Have to bring some rain gear simply because we'll be getting rain around here, and there'll be a chance. But I think we'll miss it because most of those showers will hit in the afternoon, and then we'll gather with some friends and family for a barbecue on Monday.
Got to do the barbecue.
Got to do the barbecue, too. But I also want to emphasize, too, it is Memorial Day. A lot of us have, a lot of us have had friends or family that have been in the military. And, you know, some have really have paid the ultimate price for our opportunity to live in a country with, you know, we enjoy all the freedoms and things that we enjoy here. And I would emphasize, in your own way, take some time just to remember and memorialize those heroes who have paid the ultimate price so we can live in a great country like the United States.
Very, very true. Very true. Actually, in New York City, we're having Fleet Week this weekend where members of the Navy, they're actually bringing in ships like the USS Cole, and so you kind of get to see the service members walking around. It's kind of nice to be able to see them, see a little bit about what, you know, how they live, what they do. And so just a nice opportunity. But, okay, anyway, everybody, enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. Charles, you as well.
Thank you.
Charles, I want to thank you again for joining me today. We'll talk to you next week. You have been listening, everyone, to Charles Sherry, author of Horse's Mouth's Weekly Advisor Talking Points column, which you can read every Friday on Horse's Mouth. I know Charles also offers advisors market commentaries to use in their newsletters and blogs. You can learn more about that at www.financialjumble.com. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Horse's Mouth presentation is offered specifically for financial advisors and may not be reproduced, broadcast, or distributed without permission from Horse's Mouth. Unauthorized use, reproduction, or distribution of this material is a violation of federal law and punishable by civil and criminal penalty.